Welcome to our Wednesday Rewind at Believer City Church in Menominee, Wisconsin. I'm Pastor Tim, and I'm the lead pastor here at Believer's Church. If you're local, you're no doubt listening on 101.7 FM Street Level Radio. And if you're further away, you're probably watching via the internet, maybe even watching on TV. But each week, we come together here to rewind our previous Sunday service, and this week's entitled Patience. Our text is James chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. Let's just jump in.
The book of James is written to a group of believers that, as I said earlier, that were going through some tough times. But even more than that, they were a group of believers that seemed to be willing and able to talk the talk, but just kind of failed to walk the walk. Now, that's not something that stretches the imagination in our generation. I think plenty of us will claim the mantle of Christianity, but it's a whole different thing to go out during the week and live it out. Few people in our day, I think, will rise to the defense of the book of James, if you know anything about it. The position of James, to put it short and simple, was essentially put up or shut up. He didn't beat around the bush. He didn't mess around. Few amongst us, because of that, are willing to kind of plant our feet on this issue to live it out as actually just like Jesus did. This position James is going to take in this letter is that if we are indeed reborn, then there's going to be a manifest of Jesus Christ that comes forth from our lives. Our lives will reflect what is going on inside of us. This book is written by James. And James, interestingly enough, is the brother of Jesus, half-brother anyway. Same mother, different fathers. And I just try to imagine what that's like. I don't know if you have siblings or you have brothers. Few books have brought more heat and more debate within the greater church than this one. Martin Luther once remarked that, quote, St. James's epistle is really an epistle of straw, he said, compared to the others, for it has nothing of the nature of the gospel about it, end quote. Now, I'm bold enough, and I certainly don't want to, you know, slap around Martin Luther this morning. I think he could teach me a few things. But, you know, I think I am bold enough this morning to tell you that Luther missed the entire point. Fact is, any pastor or any church that pushes holy living, any that pushes sacrificial service within the realm of grace is going to run up against detractors and it's going to run up against critics. This letter begins, ironically, with overt humility. Now, I bring that up because I think many of us, and you'll understand it more as we start to go through it, many of us would actually feel a whole lot better if James, right out of the gate, kind of came at us with a position from a position of pride, and he was eschewing some sort of arrogance, you know, kind of to hear this writer as being cocky and elitist. Well, I think it'd be a lot easier for us to just park it over here. But right off the bat, he says, "Hi, I'm James. I'm a servant," and the real word, as we learned in teens class today, is slave. I am. A slave of Jesus Christ. Seriously. A slave. How very, very different right out of the gate is that version of Christianity than that which we call out on the streets of America today. I think men generally, and I understand it, I'm not immune to this thinking. I think that idea just doesn't sit well in the, I guess, modern fragile sensibilities of our culture. I think, again, men want to come to Jesus with their boots on. They kind of want to see Jesus eye to eye. They want to come on some sort of equal grounds. But this stuff about us being on our knees before Jesus, well, that's just the stuff of the movies, right? I mean, that's not real life. Becoming a Christian for these people didn't make life easier. It multiplied life's difficulties many, many times over. They now were not only having to deal with trials and persecutions, but now they were trying to wrap their minds around any kind, to gather any kind of clarity, if you will, of what this Christian thing was going to cost
them. Trials can be a joy when God is our goal. Good or bad, hard or easy.
I think we live in an age today wherein we are both inclined and feel entitled to morph Christianity into, I think, whatever we want it to be. Now, I say in our age, and yet the fact is, such a tendency existed really as soon as 15 years after Jesus ascended to the Father after his resurrection. For that's when James wrote this book, and James is seemingly writing to address those very issues. This very tendency to slide away from authentic living, from a genuine faith, this was something that was going on even in James's day. And the practice of going all Gumby, I would put it as, and simply acquiescing to the winds of the culture. It was as real then as it is now. Already there were those who were relegating the Christian life to a tacit participation in Sabbath gatherings and an intellectual embrace. James was clearly not amused and was unwilling to just quietly stand by. In fact, he seemingly took a stand to meet the challenge that is presented here in this letter. Indeed, we know from the historical accounts that things were difficult for the average Jew in that day of James. And certainly for the one that was a committed believer, a committed follower, a disciple of Jesus Christ. So, while James herein is unyielding, he's not unsympathetic. He was not telling these folks to pull themselves up by the bootstraps and to quit their whining. He knew and he understood what they were facing. But he also knew that whatever it was, God was bigger. It was a simple concept to verbalize, but a much more difficult one to embrace. James's position throughout this letter is that if a person has had true contact with the living God, his or her life is guaranteed to evidence that meeting. Now, I'm not saying that such a life is without flaw or that it's without failure, but for sure, it is readily aware of when and if there is a flaw and a failure, and move then with vivid purpose to deal with it. For true salvation is testified throughout a life transformed. Not rehabilitated, but made new. The old man is dead, the new man is finding his feet. Now, the book of James was written by the half-brother of Jesus. He was a man who appears to have been quite a skeptic, if not a flat-out unbeliever, for nearly all of Jesus' earthly life and ministry. But somewhere along the way, it seems he apparently had changed his mind, and most people believe then that it was the actual resurrection of Jesus from the dead that made that impact and that pushed him over into the believer's camp. Clearly, he was not merely a marginal convert after that, but rather one who everything was surrendered, everything was committed, and everything was invested. Now, Jesus, he went on to write perhaps the least appreciated book of the Bible, at least with the general populace. I mean, even, you know, the legendary Martin Luther took an opportunity to diss this letter. The reason is that James wrote this letter from a rather uncompromising position, one that I think states unequivocally that if you are filled with the Spirit of God, you are living a life that's going to show it, a life that will manifest it. Now, many see such a position as being really untenable alongside the position of grace. And of course, that's ridiculous. And anyone who has really studied the book of James knows that. Yet it's propagated by those who I think fear that their grace is somehow endangered because of the ideals and the teachings of James. Now, James, he comes out of the gate here with a personal spirit of great humility and submission. He's not asking of others that which he was unwilling to give himself. He introduces himself as a slave of Jesus Christ. And again, most of us just can't seem to get there personally. We will be a believer and a tender, a supporter, maybe even a servant. But a slave? Well, that's a lot to ask. Too much to ask, apparently. James makes no attempt to exploit any street cred that he might have had at that time, aka brother of Jesus, aka leader of the church in Jerusalem. He doesn't exploit those ideals. He simply embraces the position of slave, and apparently all the connotations that go along with that title. James calls Jesus Lord. Now, many of us call him Lord too today, but often I think we fail to grasp the ramifications of that title. I don't think James did. Lord means master. Lord implies full obedience. And between the title of Lord and slave, one quickly comes to a clarity as to where James saw himself in the grand pecking order. James, in this letter, is going to examine the relationship between faith and works. Note the word and please see that it is not the word or, which many folks, I think, hear in its place. It's not faith or works, it's faith and works. Now, James, he tells the reader that they need to count it all joy when they are under fire. Count it all joy when they are run from persecution or dissed for their beliefs in general. And let's face it, that's a lot to ask anyone who's in the midst of the fires of testing. But again, I hear nothing here that smacks of a cold and unfeeling attitude by James in any way. What I do hear is a man that believes that God is in control, even in the midst of that fire. I can't help but think about the scene from the fiery furnace of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. When the music sounded, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refused to bow down to the false god, and they stated their loyalty to the true and living God. Now, furious, Nebuchadnezzar ordered them thrown into the fiery furnace, heated 7 times hotter than usual, it says. And once that was done, Nebuchadnezzar looked into the furnace, and he saw not 3, but he saw 4 men walking around unharmed, one of which looked like the Son of God. Indeed. You see, those men, they were not rescued from the fiery furnace, but rescued through the fiery furnace. Psalms 23 echoes that, saying, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, not around, I will fear no evil, for you are with me." You are with me through the valley of the shadow of death. The reason many of us yet struggle with these concepts, as well as struggle with James himself, is that what is needed to get over this massive philosophical divide is not rubber boots, but rather a boat. For many of us are in need of a complete overhaul to our thinking, a radical transformation of our living. Essentially, it seems we are talking about true and authentic rebirth in Christ, not a mental decision or a lifestyle tweak, but nothing short of dying to oneself and being filled with God himself in spirit. We're talking about a full impact experience. And nothing short of that is going to do the job. No, there's no guarantee life is going to be ultimately easier. And you need to know that this evening, especially on the short term. James was not trying to soft pedal the gospel. He was simply being honest. Honest in the respect that Christianity is not something to smooth out the bumps in one's life. In fact, Christianity is likely to do the opposite, again, especially at first. This is why most folks want to plug their ears to James, because the cost of hearing him, it's simply too high. All this is a gnosko experience, an experiential journey, one that Jesus does not promise to be easy, but does promise to accompany you personally as you journey through it. And again, through it all, he promises that the acquiring of patience will be, I guess we could say, our bonus gift. C.S. Lewis once stated, "God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks in our conscience, but shouts in our pains. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf world." Our trials and testing and even our pains are often God's plan to work not only in our lives, but through us in this world. So the question, you see, is simply, are you willing to embrace that truth? As we now go, many of you, to small groups this evening, I pray that you're going to be able to find that application for the book of James, not in some sort of esoterical kind of faraway idea, but right down to your life, your personal living, each and every day, Monday through Friday, not just on Sunday mornings when we corporately come together. Question is it through or is it around? And we know it's through. And then the next question would be, will you go alone or will you go with the Master?